life.
A podcast of the cinema.
Says you.
I do. And I'm Alonzo Duraldi. I'm a film reviews editor at The Wrap, co-host of several other podcasts. And
too many to mention.
Yes.
And too many to count.
Co-author.
Too many to think about.
Of I'll Be Home.
Too many to listen to. Let's be real.
Sure, no. That's why I get to
best that you listen to this one.
I can repeat myself because I'm not assuming that anyone's listening to all of them.
All right.
And if you do, my apologies.
I mean, I don't listen to most.
That's fine.
Of whatever else you're
That's
doing.
That's fine.
You just have too much.
I
can't do that and read this book.
The rule is always your friends don't listen to your podcast. So, you know. Yes, this book, of which I am co-author. I'll Be Home for Christmas Movies.
I'll Be Home for Christmas Movies.
It's out today.
Today.
Tuesday, October 26th.
I was about to say July.
No.
It's October.
It is.
October 26th. It's a new book. It's from Running Press, which is a division of Hachette. That's your mark of quality.
That's right.
This is a big publisher for the very first time.
Yes.
And you are officially with Alonzo Duraldi.
It's
Bran, Panda, and Dan.
Yes, they're the buy.
With Alonzo Duraldi.
Uh-huh.
With a foreword by
Christopher Palaha.
Y'all's other buddy.
Yes.
Christopher Palaha, who is, let me tell you, he's running a good game, that guy. He's having his cake. He's eating it too. He gets to be in the Hallmark movies. You know, big famous star dude in that world. And he gets to be like best buddies with a podcast that goofs on these movies.
Well, there's a handful of folks, and they regularly appear on Deck the Hallmark.
Yeah.
And they get it.
Right.
They have enough of a sense of humor about themselves and about the Hallmark movies that they can be in these movies with full earnestness and promote them in other places with full earnestness and then come on Deck the Hallmark and be like, okay.
And it's not like being a cast member at Disneyland where you're Snow White and you're walking around and when you're not
you're
on the clock.
You're always in character.
Yeah, you're always in character. And when you're not on the clock, you're not allowed to tell anybody that you're Snow White.
Right. No, I finally got to meet Mr. Palaha this weekend, and he was a delight. And I know he's been a very close friend of the Deck the Hallmark host. So I made the joke that that I'm the school friend and he's the church friend, and we never met each other. But we did.
There is no way that you would be the church friend.
No, but it's funny. He and I both live in Los Angeles. Where did we meet?
Greenville, South Carolina. Yeah. Before we continue down that road of the book and the story and the trip and the everything.
Yes. You're Dave White.
That's right.
Dang it.
And I'm somebody too.
You are.
I'm a film critic.
Yes.
And just this past week, I wrote a review for the new film called Labyrinth of Cinema.
Yes. You should go read it.
And it opened in New York just this past week, and it's going to open in Los Angeles just this week, and we're not going to talk about it on the show today to give you a chance to catch up and see it, and we'll talk about it next time.
We absolutely will.
Back to you. Two plus weeks ago, we both got our COVID booster third shots.
Correct.
Right? And we did that because we were at the 6-month mark. And y'all, COVID loves people with type 2. That's what I have learned recently. Mm. And I don't want to be loved that much.
Not by the COVID.
I know the guidelines said 8 months for people with type 2. And I thought, wait a second. If I'm an old person who is fat and has type 2 diabetes, and I'm vulnerable, why are you making me wait 8 months? I need to go get it done. Plus, they were just going to throw that shot away at the end of the day if I didn't make my little appointment.
True.
But you had a more important reason, because I can just stay home, which is what I did, while you were gone for 4 days to Greenville, South Carolina. You had to go to Greenville, South Carolina to promote this new book.
Yes.
We got those shots just to be very safe.
After spending just about all of 2020 and just about all of 2021 in this apartment. I decided to make the trip.
Roll the dice.
I talked to people.
We got our little Binax tests sitting right here. Figure out
looking forward to that.
We're going to be illnessed or not soon.
Yeah. I talked to people who have been traveling for work.
Yes.
And they were like, look, if you feel secure about where it is you're going, the actual travel part is not so bad. They're very strict on the planes about people wearing masks. They're mostly strict about it in the airports, although,
A picture of some people at LAX that were not behaving.
Yeah.
And I texted back to you, get away from those the profanity words that I used.
Yes, which I did. But on the planes, I had to take two because there's no direct LA Greenville flight. People had the masks on. You could see.
But nobody in Greenville, South Carolina is wearing a mask.
Oh, yeah, no. Once I deplaned. Nobody. The people behind the front desk at my hotel.
Even inside were wearing buildings them. And businesses.
But inside
and stuff.
The hotel.
Yeah.
Nope.
No thanks.
Inside the Quickie Marts, almost nobody.
Yeah. And that's where you dined.
Exactly. No. I went to one restaurant that was where we ate outdoors.
Yeah.
And I did eat indoors at one because it was very, it was a big enough place that people weren't near each other.
You were far away from those profanity words that I used.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
But certainly, the people who would, walk into the restaurant and stand in line and stuff. Yep.
Breathing all over you.
Yeah.
Not
into it. So we'll see how our at-home test goes. We're going to do one tomorrow and then one 3 days after that. And watch this space. Anyway, I'm glad I went. I had not seen Bran, Dan, and Panda for
a long time.
Yeah, a couple years at this point. I think the last time I saw them was
when they came to
No. I saw them for Christmas Land Experience.
Oh, that's right.
In LA, where they came for that in December of 2019.
Right.
But not since then.
But 2019 was when they came to Los Angeles to do the live show, too.
That was in July.
Yeah.
And then
that's the last time I saw them.
That was the last time you saw them.
Yeah.
We're not talking about you.
No, why not? Am I not one half of this very important podcast business relationship?
Sure, yes. But right now we're talking about me.
Not to mention this podcast business marriage.
Yes. No question. Anyway, it was great seeing them. It was fun to do they do this insane thing every year that they did once on a lark and then everybody loved it. Or not everybody, but a lot of their fans loved it. And so it has become an annual thing now.
Right.
When Hallmark launches its countdown to Christmas.
Oh, God.
In October.
Yeah.
They do a live all-day marathon where...
That's what I'm ooh-godding about.
Yeah,
I don't care that Hallmark drops their movies in October. What I care about is the grueling punishment of having to sit in a room for 18 hours.
More like 20.
Okay, 20 hours.
I mean, look,
and do this. You volunteered for it, and they volunteered for it. What's wrong with all of you?
Well, look, their fans really enjoy it. The fans also will send... care packages of candy and cookies and stuff.
I saw that. I saw Margie and I were tuning in just
to
see what you were eating.
You know, we have the Hallmark movies on in the background, and then we watched the first three movies that night, and then did three podcast episodes about those three movies. By the third one, I was like,
yeah, I'm sure everyone was.
Yeah,
they all were.
We were on our last. Fume of fuel.
My favorite part that I just happened to be tuned in for was this moment where y'all paused the movie and then covered your mouths so that people couldn't read your lips.
Yes.
And you were all having some sort of private conversation about something that appeared to be quite serious. And everyone off on the side in the comments was like, what's this? What's happening? Like, suddenly it was only murders in the building. Everybody was trying to solve the mystery of what y'all were talking about. And so much speculation on what the issue was. Was there sudden drama? Was someone telling gossip? And then someone else was like, oh, this is gossip for sure. Because everyone knows, this is a bunch of women that were saying this, like three or four women at a time were like, men are worse gossips than women. And
it's true.
They were like, oh, that's correct. That's true. That's true. And then finally, someone with a very clear sense of what was going on said, meanwhile, there are hundreds of us tuned in to a live stream where the film is paused and the conversation is muted and the mouths are covered up so we can't know anything. And yet we keep watching.
That's entertainment.
Sure.
But Mr. Palaha drove down, surprised everybody. Nobody knew he was coming from Charlotte, where he's shooting some movie. Yeah. So
it premieres on the Hallmark Channel tomorrow night.
Stop. So it was a lot of fun. I'm glad I went, and I hope that people are excited about the book. I've seen a lot of people online today sort of showing pictures of it arriving from Amazon or seeing it in a bookstore or whatever. So, you know, that's very good.
I have been reading the book. And as you know very well, now the format of the Deck the Hallmark podcast is that Bran super loves these movies.
Yes.
Panda is along for the ride because he likes his friends, and sometimes he likes the movies and sometimes he doesn't. And Dan is the hardcore hater of these films. His line is, I despise these films. Now, as you personally, Alonzo Duralde, know, I too despise these films in a way that I think could actually give Dan a run for his money.
No, yeah, you make Dan look like a booster.
And so, because I've never heard Dan say the profane and horrible things that I say.
Well, it's a clean podcast.
When I'm watching them with you. But not even in person. I haven't heard him say these things. So I like to say that I super despise these movies. And this book is delightful because it's not about the movies. I mean, it is about the movies, but it's more about
these guys watching the
movies. These guys and watching the movies and you interpreting that through a variety of fun, you know, fun, easily readable formats. And there are recipes. And I contributed a couple of the recipes.
Yes, you
to this
did.
Book. I
Thank
sure
you for
did.
That. Yeah. And there's like little tidbits from all the different actors and writers and directors that they have interviewed, you know, some fun behind the scenes.
Did you include the bit that Long Dick Dirks put in about the rat rappy pie?
Yes.
Okay.
Tyler Hines is his name.
I don't know his name. I just know him from Letterkenny.
Yes, I know.
Well, in fact, I knew him first from Letterkenny, and then I see him pop up in one of these Hallmark movies as like the handsome stud dude, and I'm like, you're Long Dick Dirks. You're a bad person on Letterkenny. You are a very funny bad person on Letterkenny. But I don't even know you in this context right here.
Yes, he told me a whole story about I did an interview.
He's from Nova Scotia. And they have a thing there that they eat.
Yes.
That I really, it sounds really,
really good.
Yeah.
He said it looks like prison food and then you try it and it's like the greatest thing.
Any fun casserole-y glop kind of food always looks like the food you would get in an institution that doesn't care about you. And then it always turns out to be tasty.
Oh, so comforting.
Yeah.
He gave me some fun stories about that stuff. Ashley Williams has a funny story about her whole extended family doing this crazy, like, run up and down the driveway in costumes on Christmas morning.
And that includes Brad Paisley.
And that includes her brother-in-law, Brad Paisley.
That's the thing that I...
And her husband, the producer of, like, you know, All Is Lost. running around in costumes on a cold Christmas morning on a driveway in Tennessee she would not share photographs. A video. But, oh, I want to
you
see
You know there's
this.
An Instagram story of this happening somewhere, right? There has to be.
I don't know. I think that kind of might be on lockdown. Brad Paisley in a Captain America costume.
I want to see Brad Paisley frolicking in a driveway. It's really just all I care about. We have films to talk about.
We do.
Today. We have, and it's an unusual episode because one film we're going to talk about opened in late July. One opened last Friday, and one opened in 1984.
Yes.
But first, the one that opened in July.
Okay. Which I already talked about, so this is kind of your catch-up.
Well, you talked about it briefly. Uh-huh. We didn't really go in on it because I hadn't seen it yet. You got a chance to see either a press screening or a link or something.
Press screening.
Yeah.
It was during that golden bubble of like, oh, we can go to screenings again.
Yeah, there was like 8 or 9 weeks in the summer before the Delta variant showed up where you were actually going back to press screenings.
Yes.
And I, for some reason, did not go with you to this press screening. It might have been a thing where I wasn't invited, where they were only inviting you, but you went, and I didn't. You went to see The Green Knight.
Yes.
Which was then opened in theaters exclusively. And I thought, well, I guess I just, you know. And the minute it opened is when Delta variant started. Because right. I was like, okay, so I'm not going to a movie theater now. Because vaccinated people are dying. And so I do not want to be among them. And so I did not go to the movie theater. And I thought, well, I'll just wait for it. And I waited. And then suddenly, about a week or so ago, the Blu-ray showed up at our door. And I finally got to watch it while you were in Greenville, South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
It is a modern David Lowery's modern retelling of the...
medieval.
But is it, I mean, is it the seminal text? Like,
kind of.
I studied this in college as sort of like, this is foundational. Like, this is how usually, narrative is shaped. You know,
if you like the English lit class you take in high school starts with Canterbury Tales and Sir Gawain and the Green Knight.
Yeah. And so, We didn't get this in high school. We got Canterbury Tales in high school. We didn't get...
Oh, we had both.
Yeah. Well, you went to... Yeah. You went to a high school where you paid tuition to go to the high school. Well, let's just call it that.
Okay.
Yeah. I went to Rock Bottom Public School. All right. So, where was I going with this? Oh, okay. So... The story is about Sir Gawain, and he's already a knight. And he goes on a quest because he is at the home of his uncle, King Arthur. And King Arthur is like, oh, here's our guest, the Green Knight. We're going to play a game. And Green Knight walks in, and he says, all right, who wants to have a go at me? Who wants to come at me? And Sir Gawain's like, yeah, I'll do it. I'll chop off your head. And he chops off the Green Knight's head. Green Knight picks his head back up off the floor and says, ha-ha, here's the game. In 1 year, at Christmas time, because today is also Christmas Day. It's a Christmas movie, Alonzo.
Yes, it is.
Have you noticed it's a Christmas movie, Alonzo?
I had noticed that, yes.
You're the one who's the expert historian on Christmas movies.
Yes.
So by rights, you're supposed to love this film.
That is not how that works.
Anyway, he says one year.
Hence.
Six nights horse ride up to the north, where it's grim. Come to my castle. And I'm going to take my giant axe. And I'm going to give you a poke or two. How do you think about that? So, this, of course, does not amuse Sir Gawain. And he goes up to on Christmas of the next year, he goes up and he can't quite do it. And he has to go home and live with that shame. The end. So this is a somewhat faithful adaptation of that story.
Ish.
In that all that stuff that I said happens, but here's what's a little different. At the beginning of this story, Gawain is not a knight.
Right.
He is a bit of a F-boy. Like, yeah. he parties, and he does sex with Alicia Vikander, mm-hmm. and she's in love with him.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, maybe.
He's kind of a climber.
Yeah. And then he goes to the party, and he thinks he's cool, and he chops off the Green Knight's head. And
he wants to impress.
Yeah. Then, turns out, his mom is Morgan Le Fay,
yeah.
the witch. Now, in the original story, she is not his mom. She's just a witch who has an interest in the proceedings.
Right.
But here, she's his mom. So her interest in the proceedings is, you need to get out of my house. And go do something with your life. And so mom is played by Sarita Chowdhury.
Mm-hmm.
We should say, Gawain is played by Dev Patel.
Yes.
The Dev Patel.
The Dev Patel.
So handsome, that Dev Patel.
Yes.
Anyway. So he goes. A year later, he ain't done a thing.
No. He's been coasting on his fame of having...
Yeah.
You know,
everybody wants to drink him under the table every night. And he's happy to let this happen.
Like, for him, beheading the Green Knight is his sex tape.
Pretty much. So, but mom's like, nope, go do your thing. Here's a green sash. It's going to... It's full of magic.
Yes.
Let's see if it does you any good. He goes off on his journey. He encounters thieves and robbers
mm-hmm.
who would leave him for dead.
Yes.
He encounters a talking fox, like in...
Antichrist.
Like in Antichrist. He encounters...
giants?
Yeah, cool giants. Naked ones, too. He encounters the fancy home of Sir Joel Edgerton.
Yes.
Who is a lord of wherever it is they live. And his lady, Alicia Vikander.
What? It's a very Lindsay Anderson bit of, like,
mm-hmm.
doubling.
It is. And then he gets to the Green Knight. Stuff happens. I'm not going to spoil the ending. You know why? Because it's a little bit of a different ending. A
little bit.
Than what you think you know is coming.
Yeah.
Not in the Demi Moore Scarlet Letter way.
No. Not in that way.
But...
Where did you pull that one out?
Oh, it stays in my head.
Oh.
That the Demi Moore Scarlet Letter is, you guys.
Oh,
y'all,
brother,
y'all. Have you ever seen it?
Roland Joffe, right?
I don't remember who made it. But it is cuckoo bananas.
Oh, to say the least.
And you should watch it sometime because you. You need to be able to talk about it at parties.
Yeah. Watch it, like, with friends and a lot of wine.
So, boy howdy, do I love this movie.
Really?
Because,
okay.
Oh, yeah. Because it is a trip. And, you know, in the 70s, that was a positive quality for a film. If you walked out of it saying that was a trip. I was a child, so I didn't get to see any of the big trip movies when I was a child. But later on in life, I saw them and, you know, can't say I don't like any of them. I mean, even Listomania is kind of weirdly fun and boring, but weirdly fun. But this has those same, you know, mystical, supernatural qualities, and I think it's a very straightforward story about, you know, are you gonna grow up and be something or are you not? But it is presented in a way that makes you wonder what the hell is going on. You think about when this story came out, the original one. This was back when people thought that if you coughed, it was because you had a demon inside you, you know. So the supernatural and the mystical and the anything goes, you know, quality of this film. That's just how folks viewed the world back then. You know, they're like, oh yes, there are giants and dragons and evil humors that live inside your body. And when you sneeze, you have to make sure that the devil doesn't come inside you. You know, I love the immersive quality of that. It looks beautiful. You know, everything is cold and wet and mossy green.
A Dave White travel brochure.
Yeah. Deb Patel is cool as this sort of bewildered person who just wants to survive. Doesn't realize until the very last moment that he has a chance to realize it, that he has been an absolute screw up the whole time. And that something better change right now.
You know, this is the kind of movie where, like, I hear people talk about why they love it, and I don't necessarily disagree. Like, yeah, I do love the way it's shot. I like a lot of the performances. I like a lot of the ideas.
Yeah.
But it doesn't come together for me.
Can you explain why?
It feels, for one thing, it feels very self-satisfied. You can sense David Lowery being all like, ooh, I'm showing you something. I'm taking this epic poem and I'm giving it my own little shit.
If I say no, that's not true, that tone doesn't exist.
I would disagree with you because I did find it there. It is an element I found in almost all of his movies, except Pete's Dragon, which I think totally works.
Right.
But in Ain't Them Body Saints, in A Ghost Story, I often feel the presence of the director wanting me to be impressed with how he's giving you these sort of familiar genres, but then, you know, giving him a little switcheroony. And ooh, how cool.
That is such a Ted Baxter thing to say. A switcheroony.
But, you know, I don't think those previous two films are entirely successful. And in fact, often I find them grating. And this one.
Okay.
Come on.
All right.
Ain't Them Body Saints, a beautiful movie. Like, yeah. Turn the volume off and look at it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But otherwise that movie drove me up the wall. And I was frequently annoyed by this one.
All right.
In between moments of being impressed by, oh, that's cool. Oh, that's a neat idea. Oh, that looks great. I like this performance.
I'll say
this is one of the best Joel Edgerton performances I've ever seen.
Because
often annoys me as an actor.
Oh, him too.
Him too. Yeah, I got it out for everybody today.
Someone's got a rock in his shoe today.
But I liked him in this one.
I'll give you this. There is style coming out the pores of this movie.
And that's not necessarily a bad thing.
For me, it's usually a good thing. Like, let's say your movie's half empty, but you're like doing cartwheels to impress me with all this, you know,
visual stuff. Folderol.
You can have me.
I say all of this completely understanding and acknowledging that I am in the minority. People love this movie. The reviews were great. And I'm just not seeing what other people are seeing in it, but most people are seeing it. So, you know, you have Vox Populi behind you.
Well, we're right. You know who else is right?
Who?
Roger and Chris.
Yay!
RogerandChris.com.
Yes.
They have a furniture company. We're doing an ad for them right now.
And once again, I swear to you, are not asking for these. We have our second unsolicited listener testimonial about Roger and Chris.
Okay, from whom?
From Wilson.
Oh, well. Okay.
He says, I love your new sponsor. I have been trying to buy a nice armchair for over a year now.
Yeah.
And you would not believe how difficult it is either to find or even let them sell it to you if you are not a designer.
What? Oh, is he trying to go to the places that are only to the trade?
Yes.
For interior designers?
Because yes, he wants something nice.
Listen, you know what you got to do in that respect? You got to hire an interior designer.
Right.
I'm sorry. That's what you have to do. Well, you have to hire the interior designer, and the interior designer goes to the places that are only to the trade.
He is not doing that. He is going to Roger and Chris.
Go get you some retail from Roger and Chris.
He says, I am loving Roger and Chris's website and am creating my own leather armchair.
That's cool.
I'm like you guys in that I've saved up for a good piece rather than a piece of crap. And he says, bonus, they're made in the small town in North Carolina where I went to college.
Oh, that's cool. Custom furniture built to the size, depth, and even height that you prefer. Thousands of colors, tons of options. You can customize it. You can get, you can choose your own legs for whatever it is you buy. They build their own furniture, as you just said, in their own factories in North Carolina. And they put furniture into businesses, too, where it's got to be sturdy and where people are just like, you know, plopping down into it with all their weight, all their might.
Yes.
They don't insinuate
no.
themselves into the furniture like what's-her-face in Gigi.
Leslie Caron.
Yeah.
They just
hurl themselves onto couches. Those are Roger and Chris couches.
Yes.
Sometimes.
Yes. The ones that make it.
The ones that don't break.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, RogerandChris.com. You can't miss with Roger and Chris. They make couches you'll want to kiss. The cushions are soft or firm. It's bliss. Give someone a chair for Christmas. No, not for Christmas. It's November already. It's not going to happen. I just made that rhyme up in my head.
I hope you were making that up in your head, because if you sat down and wrote it down.
Just made that up in my head.
That was going to be yikes.
But I'm going to remember it. I'm going to write it down. I'm going to add some verses to it. I'm going to have a jingle by the time. Listen, this is ad number 3 of 10 or 4 of 10. I can't remember now. It's time.
RogerandChris.com.
Boom. I've got it written down when the last one is. So by the time December comes around with the last ad,
you'll have an operetta.
I'm going to have a jingle written down, and it's all going to rhyme.
Right.
And it's going to be beautiful, just like those first like 3 or 4 lines that I just gave you just then.
Just like an armchair or sofa from RogerandChris.com.
They're getting their money's worth on these ad spots.
I hope so.
All right, Dune. Which one would you like to talk about first?
Oh, let's talk about the old one first.
Yeah.
Because we both saw it for the first time this week.
No, I saw it back in the
day. Oh, you saw it back in the day?
Because let me tell you all a little story about me. In Christmas of 1984.
Mm-hmm.
I was home from college for however long the break was, 3-4 weeks, long breaks. You know, when you're in college, you get practically a month off. And, you know, you're 3-4 weeks at home. My family, you don't want to hang for that long. So I went into my summer job that I had earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, hey, do y'all need Christmas help? They were like, yes, please. We need you in the box office.
I did the same thing at my old summer job at the theater, but I said, I'd like to come back, but just do box office.
Yeah.
And they were like, they made that happen.
Well, I wasn't in the box office all the time, but I was there when they needed it.
Right.
And you had to be... You had to have shown yourself to be a responsible person to be the box office.
Oh, yeah, that's
person.
The big cash drawer.
Yeah. And so, but a lot of times I was concession. That's the lowest rung on the totem pole.
Or
it was at this place.
Usher isn't lower than concession?
Oh, no. Usher is like, you're free to move.
Oh, see.
Ushers are free to move around the cabin.
My theater, boys started out as ushers and girls started in concession. And,
really?
And boys who
it
were
was
good.
Gendered?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
And then boys who were good at ushering got to do concession eventually, which meant they didn't have to like run around and sweep up all the time. And they just had to deal with the behind the counter stuff.
Oh, you know me. I love the hokey.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't. That was not down to hokey. That's why I said, I'll come back and just do box office for 2 weeks. How about that? And they were like, okay, yeah, sure. But our theater didn't have Dune. We had 2010, the year we make contact, and Runaway.
So anyway, I start, you know, back. And on, I think it was like December 20th or 22nd, something like that, mm-hmm. Dune opens.
Yes. Oh, so did you have glossaries?
Mm-hmm. So the nights that I was ushering, maybe y'all don't know about this, but if you don't know about this, go Google the Dune 1984 glossary of terminology. It was a Xeroxed sheet of paper, front and back, with all the baffling words that the characters in the movie that you were about to see were saying, and then they were explained. And I'll tell you, I have never seen customers more furious. They've got, what, 2 minutes to spare before showtime. They got an arm of popcorn, they got a hand on a drink, and I'm trying to give them a piece of paper. And they're like, what's this?
There's going to be a quiz?
I'm like, this is everything you need to read and know before you watch this film. David Lynch cared so little about...
exposition.
About explaining what anyone was talking about that you can tell in the film that there were things added after the fact where Virginia Madsen is sort of explaining every stuff to you. But it didn't matter because even if you listened to her explain the stuff, you were like, I'm sorry, who? The what? The quissa? The what? What? The who? The what are you?
The Bene Gesserit?
And... giving people this paper and then giving them my best Thora Birch in Ghost World. Yes, you have to read this before you watch the movie.
Do we think...
You have 2 minutes before the trailers
begin. Do we think, like, execs at Universal are like, oh, God, there's no way we can make this movie make... enough sense for
everybody
the average
gets
moviegoer.
A handout.
They all get, yeah, everybody gets homework.
And you have to do the homework.
They get a worksheet.
Even if you're like, you're running late into the movie and you're like,
the lights are already down.
Here.
Here's your glossary, ma'am.
Read it.
Oh.
Do not set foot in that theater until you have read.
Until you know what a Harkonnen is.
I had the best time that Christmas break working that movie because, first of all, it tanked.
Yes.
Like the opening weekend, we had business.
Yeah.
And then after the opening weekend, it just died.
Well, because this is pre Blue Velvet. Like David Lynch at this point was the Eraserhead guy and the Elephant Man
guy.
Yeah. So they were really selling this as, hey, it's like Star Wars based on that book you meant to read.
Yeah, it was not being. It was not being sold as a David Lynch movie.
No.
But it was a David Lynch movie.
Oh, yes. And this is kind of, you know the whole deal with Dino De Laurentiis.
I don't think I do.
De Laurentiis basically agreed to make Blue Velvet if Lynch would direct this. So we at least have this movie to thank for the eventual existence of Blue Velvet.
There were days... and this was our big anchor movie, the other movie that we got, it was General Cinema Prestonwood at Sackowitz Village.
Yes.
Absolutely demolished. The whole place, a giant shopping center.
Gone.
In Dallas. At this point, it was one of the shining stars of shopping centers in North Dallas at the time. Like the cast of Dallas stayed at the hotel on the property. And they would come to the movies all the time. And like fancy stores.
Oh, yeah.
Tons of fancy stores. Like rich people. This is where rich people.
This is when Dallas was, the city was flush.
It was like Highland Park Village, but the farther north in Dallas.
Yeah.
And so, and we had that movie that was going to be our big draw.
Dune.
And the other one we had was Johnny Dangerously.
We had that.
Guess what people saw less than Dune? Johnny Dangerously.
Yeah, we had 2010, we had Runaway and Johnny Dangerously, and I don't even remember what else.
We had Breaking 2. as well.
We didn't have Breakin' 2 because we'd had Breakin' over the summer and the manager was like, oh no. And so other multiplex near us got Breakin' 2 and got Beverly Hills Cop, and those were the movies everybody was going to see right. That Christmas.
Yeah. But like, even by the time Christmas came around, the Breakin' 2 audience had sort of died down.
Yeah.
So there were days when we just stood around eating pizza in the lobby. And we played Dune to empty houses.
Yeah.
Because you can't not show the movie.
You have to start the movie on
time.
You have
to start the movie on time because if someone happens to show up late.
Or the next show.
Yeah, and you can't push back the next show. So you have to start the movie whether anyone is in the theater or not, just in case someone arrives 15 minutes in and says, I don't care that I'm late. I want to watch this movie. So we would play it to empty houses.
Yeah.
And Johnny Dangerously as well. Emptier houses more frequently.
Yeah, I actually did a thing where this was, you know, obviously way pre-internet. I started a phone tree and just had all of these friends of mine from high school who were home for Christmas came to the theater, and I gave them passes to go see Johnny Dangerously because it was an empty theater.
And then they stopped being your friends. Because that movie...
It has its moments.
No, it doesn't.
Oh, come on.
But you know it does have its moments?
Dune.
Dune 1984. Oh, my God. I had forgotten just how wacky it is. And also how Twin Peaks 2018 it is.
Oh. Elaborate, please.
I will. If you've seen Twin Peaks 2018.
Season 3.
You will perhaps remember the numerous unusual contraptions in certain sequences of the show.
Oh, that's true.
Machines that look weird and do weird things.
David Bowie is now a giant tea kettle.
Yes. Okay. Now, Mr. Lynch in 1984, he already had those ideas in his head because all of the objects in Dune 1984 are weird as hell. They look simultaneously old-timey, like they should be in The Elephant Man.
Mm-hmm. Like Victorian.
And also outer spacey, like they should be in this film, and then again in Twin Peaks 2018. There are so many weird, like, chambers and valves and spigots and...
The jagged sort of steampunk.
Pipe and, you know, things shooting out of, like, walls and stuff. If you haven't seen Dune 1984 in a long time, and you're a Lynch fan, go back and look at it again.
It's on HBO Max.
There are wonderfully 1984 special effects.
Yes.
The folding...
force field?
The shield that covers you, that basically you fold space to make a shield around you.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that it's cooler in 1984 than it is now.
Even if it is sort of boxy.
That's why it's cooler.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, some Lynch, character people who are just along for the ride. Yeah.
Jack Nance,
Dean Stockwell, obviously Kyle MacLachlan, who would go on to be, you know, just about everybody after that.
Kyle MacLachlan, who Spy Magazine once had a chart of directors who cast handsomer versions of themselves.
I want to say something about that as well. You go back and look at David Lynch in the 70s and 80s.
Oh, he was a dish.
He's a good-looking man.
Sure.
I mean, he's a handsome old dude now.
Yeah.
But like...
But he wasn't Kyle MacLachlan.
Okay, sure. He wasn't a pretty boy man like he is in Dune. This giant George Michael...
Floofy hair,
yeah. Yeah. I rewatched it while you were gone, and I was like, oh man, this movie is so stupid, and I really, really, really like it.
I watched it on the plane on my phone, which is...
You're a bad person.
I didn't have a choice. I wanted to see it before seeing the new one. If the new Beverly has a 35mm screening of Dune and we're going into theaters again, I'm going.
Okay.
I want to see this again, like... writ large.
But
even on my phone, I was like, what is this movie? What is the deal with the mouth on that alien?
It was, I love the floating the floating emperor. I love
Baron.
The floating Baron, sorry. I love the cod pieces. Look, the cod pieces on people in Dune 2021 are like, we have no, there's nothing down there.
It's more dance belty.
There's nothing to see here. But the ones in the Lynch Dune are like, oh, there's plenty to see here.
Hello world.
It is like eggplant titanium. Boom.
I will say, as during my years in the as a teenager in the closet,
Sting.
The image of Sting in that metallic Speedo was like, well, not enough to make me go see the movie, mind
and
you.
Because
but.
You were flying to a Hallmark marathon when, what's the character's name? The little girl character's name. Alia or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, the sister.
When she shows up at the end, and you know her little fake blue eyes,
the Fremen
like,
blue eyes.
Yeah. I took a picture of the screen, and I sent it to you, and I texted it to you with the caption. Happy Hallmark Marathon weekend. Because that little girl, who was at the time about six.
Something like that, yeah.
Is an actress named Alicia Witt, who grew up to not only be in Twin Peaks 2018, but to be a big star in Hallmark Christmas movies.
Yeah.
Like, she's one of their go-to ladies
yeah.
in that world of people
she was
who
on
are
Sybil,
in,
too.
In the same films over and over again.
Yeah.
But she's the one at the end who says, he is the Kwisatz Haderach!
Yes.
And her eyes are like, lasering you. So I thought that was a fun little, coincidence that yeah. she's in this whole thing and you're flying on a
now,
plane.
No, it's funny because I had actually, I had posted on the, one of the Deck the Hallmark pages on Facebook, you know, one of the things I love about this movie is at the very end, they not only, in the closing credits, they not only give you the actor's name and the character name, but also a shot of the actor, like on the side.
So
it's a very
you know who's
old-fashioned kind of thing. So yeah. you put it. You know, so I took her credit card from the yeah. movie and posted it. I said, "With Dune, the new Dune opening, just wanted to remind everybody that this is where Alicia Witt started." Happy countdown to Christmas.
So now there's a new Dune.
Yes,
Denis.
I thought it was Villeneuve, but everybody tells me it's Villeneuve.
Okay. And he's French-Canadian.
Yes.
Yes. I hesitated on his last name because I'm always killing last names that I can't pronounce well. This new Dune is more spooky and hushed.
Very, yes. Well, to quote our friend Gary Cotti when discussing a Nicole Kidman performance, it's made of whispers and glass.
It's the same story. There's a boy, a very strange enchanted boy, named Paul, from House Atreides on the planet whatever. And he's the Kwisatz Haderach. He's the savior. He's the messiah. And his mom, she's kind of helping him. And they have to go to a planet that's made of spice, and the spice is a hallucinogenic drug, and it makes the whole universe operate, and if you control the spice, you are like the boss of everybody, and people are fighting, and it's in the sand, and there are giant worms, and I can't explain it. Get the glossary.
Get the glossary. No, I mean, that's the thing. For whatever you might say about the 84 movie.
I can follow it. I followed the 84 film without the glossary.
I did too.
I follow this one without a glossary. I've never read the books.
Yeah.
They're both fun to watch. This one, however, is much more self-serious.
I think it helped that I had seen the 84 one before seeing this because it gave me a grounding of the plot stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because this movie, despite the fact that it's only the first of two...
Yeah.
Whereas Lynch is cramming like this entire big fat novel into one movie.
Right.
They're very like parsimonious with some of the details about who's doing what and why. Like, the Emperor is not even in this movie, and he's the one who's...
The Baron.
No.
The Emperor. Yes, sorry.
The Emperor...
Sometimes I get things confused.
Who is pulling the strings here.
Dune is a lot, is what we're really trying to tell you.
It is very much a lot.
All right.
But taking Arrakis away from the Harkonnens and giving it to the Atreides to perform, so that the houses will go to war and keep him in power, he's not even in this movie.
Yeah.
The Sting, whoever's playing him this time around, not in this movie.
Right.
And there's a lot... I was reminded of...
Yes.
On What the Flick, when we reviewed, remember that terrible movie One Day with Anne Hathaway and Jim Sturgess?
Jim Sturgess.
So it's based on a novel. And when we were talking about the movie and how it didn't work and the characters were all kind of shallow, Christy said, well, my friends who've read the book love the book. But apparently the book has a lot of like interior monologues and it really gives you more of an idea of who these people are. And Ben said, the last thing this movie needs is interior monologues.
From these two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what Lynch does is like you get people's inner thoughts.
You do.
You get these sort of whispers. You're like, somebody will say a thing and then they'll think a thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a little weird and clumsy, but at the same time, it's like, okay, this is from a book. I get that we have to do this.
Uh-huh.
And they're not doing that here.
No.
And I almost wonder if I hadn't seen the Lynch one, would I even know what was going on in this movie?
Oh, yeah, you would, because, you know, even the parts that are sort of mysterious,
mm-hmm.
at least one character close to the end says, just go with the flow. And you're like, okay.
Okay.
I've been doing that this whole film, so yeah.
Christy, when we talked about it on Breakfast All Day, she saw it in IMAX.
I watched it on HBO Max.
I did too. She was gaga over the way it looks, and even though she didn't emotionally connect with much of the plot of the characters, like just loved the visual experience of it all. I found it all to be kind of tone on tone on tone. Like,
well, you know, this is the monochrome future,
mm.
and it's dour, and it's minimalist. And it's depressing, and it's also militaristic, which
it is
sort of like
it is
two things you hate. You know?
It is Jessica Chastain's suitcase as she's moving out in Scenes from a Marriage. Everything is taupe in this movie.
Yes. The first thing you see is the dune. You're like, oh, look, it's the dune. It's made of sand. Everything in this movie is sand, or the color of things that are close to the color of sand. So... it isn't a bright, colorful future.
No.
Of the year 10,191, I think.
Something like that.
It's an upsetting place to be. And giant worms are trying to eat you because you are standing on their spice.
Yes.
I am, in general, not a fan of the dour, monochrome, minimalist, militaristic future.
Right.
I much prefer a future like you would get in, say, Logan's Run, minus the you have to die at 30 element. You know, I mean, 30 is when the sex is starting to get good. You know? But everyone gets a colorful tunic in Logan's Run. Everything's clean. It's modern. You get a monorail that takes you everywhere you want to go. There's fun, parties and stuff. Everyone's just hanging out.
I want the revolutionary waitress future from Cloud Atlas.
Also, that future would be pretty good, too.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, if I have to be in a future where everyone's upset and there's just battles all the time... I'll just roll over and die. How about that instead? But the what's I think great about this movie is that it kept me wanting to watch more of a scenario that I am not a fan of. You know what? It's like, how many more Star Wars can we Star Wars on top of a Star Wars?
Right.
But this is kind of Star Wars if it, in the words of our friend Johnny Jungle Guts, imagine Star Wars, but better.
Well, it was one of the sources, I think, for George Lucas. And of course now then in retrospect, it looked like, oh, this is borrowing from Star Wars when it's the opposite.
Right.
I have a suspicion, and a few people have agreed with me on this in the Breakfast All Day chats. I bet that the books are more interesting for the like palace intrigue and the commentaries on like colonialism and resource management and that kind of thing. But then they have to turn them into a movie and it's like, okay, we have to like really
fighting.
We have to play up the fighting and the assassinations and the scheming and whatever. Yeah. And so it's like, I don't know that I'm ever going to read this book.
Oh, I will never.
But I have a suspicion that the movies, that whatever people really love about the books is never going to make it into the movies because it just does. They're operating on two different levels of thing.
I am a big fan of the way, like Christy said, of the way this looks. And I would go to a theater and watch it a second time. Just for the sort of enveloping experience of that.
I would give it a shot because people are telling me that that makes a difference. But I have to say, it didn't... I wasn't sitting there going, oh, God, I want to see this big screen. I was kind of like going... I mean, I got
through
it.
So you were bored.
I was kind of bored.
You were bored. I was not bored.
Even knowing what was happening and you know what was about to happen.
I think the filmmaking is strong enough that it carries you along, even though I think... young Mr. Chalamet is not a dynamic central character.
Yeah, he has one line reading where he talks about grandfather fought bulls for sport.
Yeah.
That's kind of his, you know, power reactors at the Toshi station moment. Like, oh, let's not do that again. But I see where they're, if you're going to have a messiah warrior character.
Yeah.
You maybe don't want to have him be obviously like you don't make Jason Momoa that character. You make Timothée Chalamet that character because that's interesting and different.
Because like in The Green Knight, he has to
prove himself.
He has to learn to be the thing he knows he has to become.
Yes. Yeah. He has to have, you know, the...
So it's been a week of boy adventures.
Yes. Yes, it has.
And you know, we can't have enough of those.
Well, at least one of the boys isn't white. There's that much.
Well, sure.
But it's still in an epic of Brit lit. So, yeah. You know.
I say yeah to this. Okay. It doesn't hold the place of fun in my heart of the Lynch Dune. It takes itself very seriously. It's certainly got, you know, a lot of you know, cinematic sense on its mind. It wants to impress you. And
now that they have announced that this is but one of two films, I kind of feel like I'm not going to really know my mind about this until I see the second
one. You see the second one.
This is like stopping after one Kill Bill. And you're like, well, I mean, it's this.
When is she going to kill Bill?
Yeah, I don't have the whole shebang in front of me.
When
to really
is Celine and Julie going to go boating?
But they do, though.
Well, you have to wait a long time.
You do have to wait for it, but they make it worthwhile. I will be curious to sort of take in the gestalt of it all. But, you know, I really did like Blade Runner 2049 and Arrival a lot.
Yeah.
So I'm generally down for a Villeneuve's brand of, like, epic sci-fi. But yeah, this, I don't know, it hasn't grabbed me yet, but I'm open to the possibility that either the big screen experience or the sequel will bring me around.
Well, okay. You want to... Ooh, we got a lot of letters.
We got some letters. Yeah, quite a few of them are short, though. But
okay. Yeah. This one's not.
Why don't you start with the Jesus music letter, because we keep missing that one for some reason for the last...
Well, I'm starting with the Sydney letter.
Okay, well, just make sure we get there.
Dear Knife Gentlemen, I'm finally writing this to you to give myself a voice, as Jack has been stealing my thoughts and sound bites to send to you in order to make himself more interesting. I know who this is.
Yeah.
I can no longer sit by and allow him to become known as a more colorful and funny listener in your eyes. Things having to do with me. As the kids say simply, no free clout. I will say briefly, this movie marathon is kicking me down. I think the sheer volume of scary movies is weakening my senses, like the Stanford Prison Experiment. Soon I will turn into a monster, just as they did. Or more realistically, I will continue to have nightmares and look over my shoulder around every corner of the house. I will note, this isn't like me. I was reading Stephen King books when I was 10 years old, so I do not shake easily. I am, however, broken down by the sheer volume of them. Yet I dredge on, so I asked Jack to compile this list a year ago, and now that other parties, you and your listeners, by virtue, are involved, I can't abandon it. I will say, I hope there are no more movies with messages on this list. Jack has kept it top secret, which is fine, but Funny Games, like The Lighthouse, has ruined cinema for me. Oh, but The Lighthouse. Okay, we won't argue about it today, Sydney.
Do you like me lobster?
Yeah. I'm not a frequent listener. Well, then...
Really? Well,
Our feelings. But Jack does inform me of your goings-on, because he really loves the podcast. Congrats on the book, Alonzo. Dave, sorry to hear about the beatus. I'm type 1, and I have been for 8 years, so welcome to the club. None of us wanted to join. I also hear you're probably experiencing some liver dumping? The dawn phenomenon or foot-to-floor syndrome with your early morning spiking. I'm on a CGM. I don't know what that is. And I know how wild those numbers can be. As helpful as any stranger on the internet can be, I offer my support and assistance if ever needed. I expect y'all will hear from me again as we approach the end of the month. Keep my feeble heart in your thoughts these last 10 days. Well wishes, Sydney.
Well, thank you.
Pronouns they, them.
Yes.
Okay, there's another message from Sydney.
Yes. Sydney wasn't done.
Just one more note that I'm hoping reaches you before you record. I know Jack expressed some concerns over my ability to handle gore, specifically as it related to the audition and Martyrs. I will say the audition wasn't that bad. I hate that my girl was taken out of the game so soon, gone but never forgotten. Jokes, kind of. Martyrs shook me to my core. I genuinely can't even come up with any notes of the movie on a technical aspect because it truly filled up my senses and made my skin feel like it was on fire. Following the movie, my brain felt like an egg frying on the sidewalk. I did thug it out the entire way, though, because I couldn't deal with all my fear being for nothing. Gore aside, the ghost of the girl was scarier than anything I have ever seen. All these movies, Martyrs aside, have been spooky, but none have scared me except Wreck.
Oh, yeah.
Finally, some decent scary content. You shall hear from me again soon. Thank you, Sydney.
All right.
The Jesus music letter
from
Helen. Thank you for your review of this movie that I will not see.
Helen, that's fair.
Helen, join the club, because nobody would see that movie. We had Grace Baldridge come on the show to talk about it with us.
Who, by the way, has reached number one yet again.
On the Christian music charts this week on iTunes, yeah.
What's the new one called?
Oh, don't.
I'm sorry.
Don't do that to me. I've forgotten the title.
Anyway.
Because you made it erase itself from my head.
She records under the name Semler, S-E-M-L-E-R. Yeah. You can find it. Look at the top of the charts on iTunes.
Look at the number one spot.
And there you'll find it.
Yeah. She said it really brought me back to my days when I was a student at Liberty University.
Ooh.
Oh, parenthetically, before getting kicked out twice.
Nice. By the way, this weekend I was near Bob Jones University.
Well, I'll tell you something. Bob Jones and Liberty will give each other a run for their money. Mm. I think that I sometimes have thought in my life that Bob Jones and Liberty are in a contest to see how horrible, who can be the most horrible. Anyway, she continues, all of these bands would come in and give concerts that were free to students. Carmen was absolutely the Liberace of Christian music. His concerts were theater and pure camp. It was nice to hear people who also went through it and came out the other side. I was wondering, do they mention Stephen Curtis Chapman at all? Yes, they do. He's in the movie as an interview subject.
Briefly.
But not a lot.
No.
Yeah. Which is weird because he was a big, he's been a big deal. She continues, back in the early 90s, I listened to him almost as much as Michael W. Smith. I think my parents preferred him as he seemed more clean cut than Michael W. Smith at the time. Can you imagine thinking that Michael W. Smith was not clean cut?
Too edgy.
Yeah, he was too edgy. Anyway, I love the podcast, and don't worry about not getting a link to Venom. LTBC. Oh, Let There Be Carnage. It's better than the first one, but apart from the end credit scene, it's not worth risking Delta variant for. everybody in my youth group, my senior year in high school, from our weird little fundamentalist Baptist church, they all went to Liberty.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. One of the dudes, the preacher's son, he went to Liberty, and he became a big Southern gospel singer with, like, the Gaithers.
Uh-huh.
I think the Gaithers.
Okay.
Anyway, big deal Southern gospel singer. And, you know, his sister was in my class. But yeah, they all went to Liberty. And the things they told me about that place just chilled me down my spine. All the rules that you had to follow and all the weird, like, things you could and could not do. And just terrifying. Thanks for the letter, Helen.
Glad you enjoyed the discussion.
Halloween kills is the subject line. Oh, shoddy. Dear David Alonso, it seems to me the way to fix Halloween kills would have been to cast an Ann Coulter, Laura Ingraham-style bizarro twin of Jamie Lee Curtis as the villain. But instead, the two male writers of the movie decided to get rid of all the female leads for the most part.
Mm.
That's accurate.
There are three male writers, but yes, point taken.
Also, Alonso is a total poop for not letting Dave enjoy this movie the same way that Dave lets Alonso gorge on his Hallmark Christmas movie. Should I say this word on a clean podcast?
I'm not sure. It's Japanese. We'll leave it at that.
Festivals all year. J'accuse. Well, Shoddy, you are right.
Look, Shoddy, I don't come onto this podcast of the cinema and try and pretend that those movies are art. I understand they are junk, and they're my comfort food and my big bowls of sugar that I enjoy. Dave is trying to make a case that this is a film that works as
about something.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
And that's
well, it's been a week, and I don't know how I feel about that anymore.
Fair enough.
Sometimes, you know, you get a little time away from something, and you think, I don't know.
Maybe not.
Maybe. Maybe I'll forget about it forever. Tim says, taking a little trip through Arizona and writing to you from the Wigwam Motel in Holbrook.
Ooh.
Watching The King and I on TCM, I must agree that it is one whacked-out film, and a lot of it is difficult to watch, but what made it even more unwatchable was the restoration itself. In this new improved King and I, the yellow backgrounds of the pivotal introduction scenes are so bright they overpower. They overpower Yul Brynner instead of framing him. The lighting for Deborah Carr is supposed to caress her with soft highlights. The restored version slaps white highlights like clown makeup onto those magnificent cheekbones. The end product of a digital restoration should be to reproduce as closely as possible the look of the original projected image. The production crews at the old studios were masters of the art of light and shadow. These restorations blow all of that away, making the whole thing look like an overproduced video game.
I have not watched this restoration, so I can't speak directly to it, but I'm going to throw a theory out.
Yeah.
If you're watching this movie on a TV in a motel, it's possible that the TV had the motion smoothing turned on.
I don't know, maybe.
The motion smoothing makes everything look like a telenovela. It gives it that crispy high frame rate look from like the Hobbit movies and stuff.
Oh, okay.
And it makes, remember when we were at your sister-in-law's house for Thanksgiving?
Yes.
And Hello Dolly was on TCM on their TV, and it looked like
so weird.
It looked like it was shot in HD or something freaky like that. And I was like, oh, they've got the motion smoothing on.
Mm-hmm.
So it might be that was the case, and that's why the colors got blown out and why everything looked really artificial. I don't know. Just throwing that out there as a theory. I mean, I like to think that the people who are doing these restorations, that people, we're advanced enough in the technology that everybody's super cognizant of trying to remain as true to the original as possible while maybe cleaning out the grain or whatever else. I don't know. But maybe they messed this one up. I don't know. Couldn't tell you.
Robert the Kirby.
Mm.
King cartoonist.
Yes.
Says, oh, Dave White, you have convinced me to spend $4.99 on Halloween Kills on your Trumpian analogy alone. Mm. Well, you know what? Don't blame me for everything. Because maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
You better own that, Dave White.
Sure. It's my fault. Would you like $5, Robert? I'll Venmo you $5 if you want. Kitty cat.
Oh.
She said, I'm so excited for anything Todd Haynes. Well, honey, go watch that Velvet Underground movie because it is the effing best.
Yes.
Yeah. Joe says, Lou Reed was a great beauty. Wasn't he? He was cute.
He was.
He was cute
he
back
had,
in the...
He had a Dewey period,
he had a
for
cute,
sure.
Cute part of his life back then. All right, there are a couple longer letters that we have to sit on till next week because you...
Yes.
...have a virtual book event to participate in about...
Half an hour.
15 minutes. So, let's get it together and get the hell out of here.
Yes, I have a shirt to iron and all kinds of things to get ready. So, thanks everybody for listening. Check out my other podcasts, please. Breakfast All Day, Maximum Film. I'm rather frequently appearing on Deck the Hallmark. And, of course, pick up the book that I wrote with the Deck the Hallmark guys. I'll Be Home for Christmas Movies. It's available wherever books are sold. Thank you, Blue, for our wonderful theme music. And go check out his stuff, including his great new album, Six Tape, at blueblu.bandcamp.com. You can subscribe to the show for free at Apple Podcasts. Please leave us a 5-star review when you do. We will read that on the air. You can also leave positive feedback, little thumbs and stars and whatever the heck else, at all the places that we stream, including Spotify, Stitcher, thelounge.com, Google Play, Apple Music, CastBox, Podbean. You can follow us at LinoleumCast at Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. Dune, Arrakis, Desert Planet, The Worm, The Spice. Until next time.
Yeah, goodbye.